The eunuch asked Philip, "About whom, may I ask you, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else?" And then Philip began to speak, and starting with the scripture, he proclaimed to him the good news about Jesus. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. How many of you all went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison? How many of you are somehow attended there? And even though it was probably years ago, how many of you had to take one of these freshman large lecture hall classes? So, like chemistry the first semester, or calculus the first semester, or physics the first semester. All these classes that so many different majors need to take. So, the first semester of calculus, that's not for math majors. That's for folks who are going to be economists, they're going to be engineers, they're going to be all kinds of other disciplines. And so they say that the freshman experience at UW-Madison is actually Calculus 1, Chemistry 1, and Physics 1. Because there are, I think at Chemistry 1, there are 35 other majors that require the first semester of chemistry. And there are, each semester at UW-Madison, 3,500 students that have to take Chemistry 1 because they are going into other disciplines. Well, the university realizes this, and if you've ever been in one of these classes, think about being in a large lecture hall if you ever had one for math. And think about the way that math is taught. First of all, what side of the instructor do you most often see in a math class? It is not this side, let me tell you, usually. All right? And then, if you're in a large lecture hall, how are they, you know, doing problems for you? Well, you're seeing the other side of them, and they're writing on the board. And so the university for a couple of years now has been trying to transform these large, high enrollment classes so that there are better student outcomes. Because they're finding it's not just, you know, some of y'all survived in those, but some students don't survive. And even though there might not be as, the A range is not growing, but it is growing a good bit, they're finding that after they've gone through these transformations of these classes, nobody's failing. The fail rate has almost disappeared in what used to be weird classes. And they actually have done just two basic things. One is, the math teachers have turned around. Now their backs are never to the students. They've given them a technological solution so that they can draw on an iPad, and it's projected up on the screen, and they can face the students. And actually the professors are like, wow, there are people out here. So I'm just doing this for myself. But there was a second thing that they did. And that is, they have made the instructors pause every 10 minutes in the class, give the students a problem, and leave the podium. So every 10-minute increment, whether you're in Chemistry 1 or Physics 1 or Math 1, there will be a problem that's put up for you to solve in groups, whoever's sitting around you, and that instructor will come down, and he'll go visit a group and say, like, how are you doing on this problem? Or a TA will come down from the back and say, you know, are you getting how to resolve this here? Do you think you balance this equation? And the students, A, they can't be on Facebook when you're doing this, so they're more engaged. But B, the faculty have actually discovered something about their teaching they never knew. They have discovered that the problems that they thought that those students had in performing these, finding the solutions to these equations, are not the ones they had at all. To a person, they'll say, you know, I'm a good teacher, and I would try to think what I need to do when I teach a person a new, you know, related race in calculus. The thing I need to do is figure out where they're going to get stuck and show them how to get unstuck. But when they did that, they did it without ever talking to the students to find out where they actually did get stuck. And I've been interviewing math teachers. I spent all day Wednesday interviewing them because they feel like they know how to teach for the first time now. Every single one of them, when you ask them what was the biggest change for coming down, they were fearful to do it. They said the biggest change was, I actually found out where the students struggle. It was not the place I thought they struggled at all. I would get back there, and they begin the problem, and I was all ready with the answer for this other part of the equation, and guess what? They solved that part. It was another part of the equation they had no idea how to do. And that has made a huge difference to the way I approach teaching. I face the students, and then I go down with them, and I actually find out what their questions are. Now, I'm not here to talk about pedagogy this morning. I'm here to talk about the gospel. I'm here to talk about this fabulous story that Sarah read us from the book of Acts about Philip, who has been sent by the Spirit into the wilderness, which doesn't seem like a place you're going to go to evangelism. The reason it's called the wilderness is because it's the wilderness. No one's there. But the Spirit has particularly sent Philip into the wilderness, and when he gets there, he does encounter a person. There's one person on a chariot riding by, reading out loud. And Philip, needing a little prodding, also the Spirit says, this is why you're here, Philip. I didn't send you out here just for a nice walk. Go over and talk to that man. So Philip goes over, and when he gets there, Philip asks a single question. Do you understand what you're reading? That's the only question that Philip asked the whole time, because the rest of this interaction is driven by the eunuch. The eunuch then says, how can I understand unless somebody tells me? And so they start reading it. And I'm guessing Philip is thinking, I've been sitting here, I'm having this encounter, I've gotten up in this little chariot with this man. He's going to ask me something else. Or Philip's probably been in the back of his mind writing the sermon that he's going to relate based on this passage. But they're going through the reading, and before Philip even has a chance to speak, the eunuch asks a second question. And the question is just simply, who is this about? Is this about the person who wrote it? Or is this about someone else? And we actually don't know how Philip answers that question, other than Philip is able to see in that question an answer that is the person of Jesus. And my guess is Philip is getting on a roll here, because the next thing that happens is that eunuch needs to interrupt him again, because he's got another question. The question is, there's water here. What prevents me from being baptized? It's not that Philip said, you know, you've heard this story now, would you like to be baptized? It's not that at all. The eunuch is so compelled by what he has heard and by the questions that are in his mind, questions that could only be asked because Philip actually got into the chariot with him, that now he wants something more. It's such a remarkable story because about when we think about evangelism. It's not the way that we think that people will come to know the good news of Jesus Christ. We think that it is through figuring out a clever way to present who Jesus is. We think it is through offering, you know, beautiful worship services. We think it is by inviting folks in to participate in causes and in action and in activism. But this story, in any light of the book of Acts, have nothing to do with the agency of the evangelist. They have everything to do with the agency of the Spirit. Because what it takes to be a good evangelist is to trust that the Spirit is at work. That when the Spirit sends you into the wilderness, there's a reason to be there. But it also means that you have to believe that the Spirit is out there already doing the cultivation of folks who just have questions. And we just have to be quiet long enough to let them ask them. Instead of going out and saying, we know where you struggle, and we've got the answer for that struggle, we need to go out there and say, do you know what you're reading? Do you know what's happening to you in your life? What is it that is, hanging you up? And then let them ask questions and only speak to answer the questions that they've asked. And I think we have evidence that we have done the first thing, that we have continued to think that the problems that the world has, we have already discovered what they are, and we have discovered the way to answer those questions. I think we can do that because we can see that churches of all ilks and faith communities of all ilks, they decline. And I think the decline is related to the fact that we are not answering the questions that they're asking. And the things that we're offering, other people are better at. If we think that we're just offering a community, if we think that we're just offering a way to get involved, if we think we're just offering a way to join a cause, if we think we're just offering a way to get in a march or a protest, there are folks that do that so much better than we do. If that's our offer, that's what we think we have to offer, we'll continue to see decline. But I think the second thing is the bigger thing, which is we don't know what the magic bullet is to get people to come to church because we've never really asked them. We haven't paid attention. We haven't got into the chariot with them. We've not believed that the Spirit has sent us into the wilderness for a reason. Because you have to get off the stage and get into the crowd to know what questions are actually being asked so that you can actually answer them. Now the good news for us is we kind of be like Philip here, which is we actually know the answer to their question. We feel as though the reason we want to control their questions is because we already know the answer. Which is basically what instructors do when they are teaching in the way that they used to teach math. Which is, I know how to answer that question. You might ask me a question I don't know the answer to if I come out there. But the good news for us is the Spirit is the one who's doing the evangelistic work. And the Spirit is the one that has already given us the answer. The answer is the proclamation of the good news in the language that responds to the question that that person has asked. I really think that the church can change the world not by telling, but by listening. And I really believe that that is what the Spirit wants us to do because when Jesus talks about the field that's ready for harvest, he never said you planted that field. He never said you cultivated that field. He said, I'm not looking for people to go out there and weed that field. I'm looking for people to go out there and harvest what has already been cultivated and watered and grown for you. The only way to harvest, the only way to answer questions is to go. Get the chariot. But this is not the only place that Philip goes with this eunuch. He goes somewhere else. He goes into the water. The text is very specific that Philip gets into the water with that man because he got into the chariot with him. And that's why we go to listen. So that we will be there when they're walking.